ABC Radio Australia.
A decade ago, when Dan Leo called out the Samoa Rugby Union over corruption allegations, he was dropped from the national team and never played for the Manu again. Since then, as a founder and chief executive of Pacific Rugby Players Welfare, Leo has gone on to be a powerful voice for Pacific players all over the world. And now he has just released a film documentary called Oceans Apart, which crystallizes much of what he believes is wrong with rugby in the Pacific, particularly in Tonga and Samoa, and who is to blame. Richard Ewart took a look at the movie and he's been speaking to Dan Leo about it.
In 2016, I set out to find the real stories behind why Pacific Rugby is struggling. And despite providing many of the world's top players to an ever-profitable sport, the island nations of Samoa, Tonga and Fiji increasingly find themselves on the edge of bankruptcy.
The overriding points of the documentary was to make sure that Tonga and Samoa aren't being forgotten about, that we are increasing the betterment of the governance in our nations so that we can put ourselves back in that shop window. We wouldn't want to see two awesome nations just left by the wayside.
80-20 split, it's not going to hurt England.
Were the rugby values in taking £4 million from a rugby match as your gate receipts and your broadcast, not even sharing them with an impoverished nation?
They should be remunerated, you know, and I think that should be part of ticket sales from the day. Everyone puts their hand up, says they're going to do good stuff, and then nothing happens because no one does anything about it and everyone just forgets about it. We do a huddle of solidarity, we go with your brother, and then we go off and play, you know, New Zealand next week. That's the way it goes.
There was perhaps a bit of a breakthrough that the Tier 1 nations were prepared to talk, but now those talks are on hold, and I'm guessing COVID-19 may or may not have something to do with that. So how optimistic are you that eventually the Samoas, the Fijis, the Tongas of this world will get, you know, at least a 10% share when they play in front of a packed house in Twickenham?
The reality is that those conversations had gone cold before COVID struck, and that's the worry. And I guess one of the aims of the documentary is actually to continue to put pressure on these countries, not to just say yes, 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 and then never do anything about it. Actually, we need action.
The most disappointing part in all of that was that a lot of this money was publicly raised. Everyone had donated because they wanted to see us do well and they had pride in our team. So to turn up and at times not have balls to train with, you know, no kit, it just wasn't good enough.
I think he ought to be taken to a mental confinement. He is utter stupid.
Tell me a bit more about your encounter with the Prime Minister, because early on in the documentary, of course, you show a clip of him from a number of years ago when you were involved in a player's dispute with as a Samoan international, and he basically called you stupid and said that you should just stay out of it. And yet here we are a few years later and you're sitting face to face in his office and his parting words to you were, anything you can do to help us. So has his attitude changed?
Yeah, I think it has, you know, as much as probably people would have wanted me to go in there and really give a piece of my mind. Actually, within the Samoan culture, we still have to do things with a lot of respect. And even, you know, there's a lot of water under the bridge. It still had to be done within that context for me to come out of the film with any credibility, but also with the Samoan people and the people that I work with.
The whole thing is unfair. We are helping to replenish the huge bank accounts of the big boys, Tier 1.
I guess, you know, we haven't always seen eye to eye on certain issues, but I appreciate you having me here.
Whatever you can do to help us.
It's around about 11 million tala to fulfil all our programs. 60% is locally funded, with a few here and there from a few overseas partners that we have at the moment. And then the other 30% is funded by World Rugby. But we're in a difficult situation for us because we can't get those sizable sponsors because we don't play that many games. Without government, there would be no rugby union in Samoa, and that's the honest truth.
The involvement of politics in the islands is actually intertwined based on the system and not the other way around. I was always, as a player, if we cleaned up our own politics, that would be the problem solved. But sort of a turning point in the film is that actually we can't move away from government funding until some of the bigger fixes of the game are there and there's a better profit share model, a more fairer profit share model in place that would allow the politicians and the government to move away in terms of their funding to allow the unions to be able to bring and top officials themselves to run our unions in the right ways.
You can't be in a development partner relationship with an organization who's going to hang the carrot of we're going to pull our money on you, right? It's like being married to someone who threatens to divorce you every week. If you're a partner that doesn't make me feel that the balance of power has been equaled out, then that's not the reality of the relationship.
Rugby has never been the leading moral saviour of human rights. It's never protected human rights. Remember, rugby used to go to South Africa throughout apartheid. All blacks had to go, and if you took a brown guy, you had to be an honorary white. People are just ignorant to blaming it on the Samoa Rugby Union. There is a bigger enemy here. There is a bigger problem here. And that is world rugby.
Eliota Fumanu Sapolu, he's a practicing lawyer in the Samoa. I mean, it was really interesting. It was the first time I'd heard that myself. It's something that we'll delve into. We're well supported now through the legalities with Pacific Rugby Players Welfare. So it's, again, raises avenues for us to delve further into. We need to understand the bigger pictures here. And one of those is their borderline exploitation of Pacific players throughout professional rugby. It's going to require getting the right people around the table with the right ideas. But definitely everything that I think we addressed in the documentary and everything that was highlighted to us and through that 3-year period of sort of really investigating the issues is achievable, in my opinion. It may not happen overnight. It may not even happen in the next 5 years, but it could happen. We can't relinquish hope. Otherwise, you know, when it comes to Samoa and Tonga, we might as well stop playing rugby altogether.
We need to be receiving our fair share of money we are helping others to earn. Rugby's funding model has trapped the islands into a handout mentality, where a reliance on small donations has stolen our ability to earn greater income. We also need the eligibility rules to change so that we can access all of our players. Allowing a single change from a Tier 1 down to a Tier 2 nation of heritage would have an immediate effect on growing the global game. And best of all, it wouldn't cost a thing. Underpinning this all is the fact there has to be change to the way rugby is governed. We cannot continue to allow unelected, incompetent officials, government politicians, to use rugby for their own personal gain, while the Tier 1 nations continue to hoard the majority of profits and power to the detriment of our nations. If we can achieve these things, the future of Pacific rugby looks bright. And rest assured, I won't give up trying to improve the game we love.